names. We're talking about firsts this whole month of January firsts, and I've tried to pick out some obscure ones that nobody else might think of. So, of course, it would be easy to talk about the first sin or the first person that was made by God or the first of this and that. But I've tried to pick out some that are more obscure. And so today I want to talk about the first time that a human being gave a name to God. And so there's a little bit of a hint here, and I have been posting some things on Facebook, so if you were looking at the church Facebook page, you may have got a hint, a preview of what the name was that was the name first given to God by a human being, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more. The name was Elroy, and I had not heard that or known that. If I had heard it, I did not commit it to memory until this week, frankly. And so we want to talk about some famous Elroys. And so can anybody name a famous Elroy? Anybody at all know somebody named Elroy? There's not a whole lot of them. Elroy Jetson is about the only one that I could think of. There's the cartoon, the Jetsons, about the family from the space age that, you know, they have the flying cars and meet George Jetson, his son Elroy. And that's the only one I could think of. What's that?
Jane, his wife.
Jane, his wife, right. You're on the right track. So for copyright purposes, we didn't put the characters or the song up on there, so, you know. I looked up some other famous Elroys. Elroy Hirsch, I don't know this person, but maybe some of you do. He was nicknamed Crazy Legs. He was a professional NFL Hall of Fame player, and he was known for his unique running style, so people couldn't tell where he was headed. Never heard of him before. There was somebody named Elroy Face. I thought it would help to put a face with a name, but it didn't. I still don't know him. Elroy Face, he was a professional Major League Baseball player, and he was a standout relief pitcher in the Major League Baseball, remembered for his precision and dependability, except not by anybody that I know. Elroy Smith was a professional radio personality and programmer. He was a key figure in urban and gospel radio programming, symbolizing influence and creativity. And then, of course, there's Elroy Hilbert. You all know Elroy Hilbert, don't you? Well, if you go to Cottonwood Airport in Rockford, and you're part of EAA Chapter 22, you would definitely know Elroy Hilbert because he flies a number of planes, but he has a big yellow one with an orange belly that he flies a lot, him and another guy by the name of Lance Anderson. Elroy is pretty famous around Cottonwood Airport. If you say, well, just talk to Elroy about that, then everybody will know who you're talking about. He's also a aviation maintenance instructor at Rock Valley College, so a lot of people have gone through that program in the Rockford area and then gone on to aviation technology careers in the Rockford area, and so a lot of people know Elroy from that. But most of you probably don't know Elroy from Cottonwood Airport. Similarly, I'm wearing my bright yellow sweatshirt today that says my name on it, and it says EAA, Experimental Aviation Association, Chapter 22, Rockford, Illinois, and it says my name. And so our whole family has spent quite a bit of time out at that airport and with this chapter, if you didn't know that. And unbelievably to me, really, I was elected vice president a few years ago, and we've been out at that airport probably two or three times a week on average for several years. But there were a lot of people that, when it came time for a recent re-election to vice president in November, people said, well, we don't know you. We don't see you out here hardly ever. So, you know, it seems that your job is taking up too much of your time, and so we need somebody that can be here more often. We need somebody that we recognize, that we see out here as vice president. So I was not reelected. Some people didn't even said they didn't know my name. They claimed they'd never seen me out there. And I found that hard to believe, but that's how it went. So that, truthfully, it kind of stung a little bit. Like, you don't even know who I am? I've been the vice president for, 2 years, and you don't know who I am? I have a bright yellow sweatshirt with my name on it, you know, but everybody knows who Elroy is. And so that's where we're going to get to here, get to the point. There's another famous Elroy, except probably many of us, if not most of us, don't know him by that name. So the Hebrew phrase for Elroy is actually spelled slightly different. It's E-L space R-O-I, and it looks like this right here in Hebrew. And in Hebrew, the phrase Elroy, actually it'd be this way, Elroy, translates to the God who sees me. And this is, in fact, the first recorded nickname, I'm calling it a nickname, for God. It was given to God by someone named Hagar in Genesis chapter 16. And we're going to turn there and kind of camp out in Genesis chapter 16 for the remainder of our time together. But Hagar, that's another person that maybe you might have heard that name before, but who is it? What did that person do? I find it interesting that if you Google search the name Elroy, you can check me out on this, it will say that it's the first name given to God by man. That's interesting. So Hagar, when I think of Hagar, I think of my grandpa's men's clothing store. This was from his store. He had a basement. He had a first floor area where there were suits and dress clothes and stuff, and then there was like a more casual department downstairs in the basement of his store, and it was called the Inn Shop. And down there were blue jeans and more casual clothing, and there was a clothing brand called Hagar. It's spelled with two G's. And I was doing a little research to find out more about that brand to see, does it even still exist? I'm not sure. And I couldn't really find that. But Hagar, interestingly enough, the brand, they coined the term slacks. So if you ever heard an old person talk about their pants as slacks, it's because of the brand name Hagar. And they made some pants that had a cuff at the bottom that came made that way. And so that was kind of cutting edge technology, I think in the late 20s or 1930s is when they made that. They made slacks. So Hagar. But that's not the Hagar that we're talking about. We're talking about the Hagar who was actually a woman in Genesis chapter 16. So let's turn there together if you haven't already. Let's look at Genesis chapter 16. And I've put the words, or most of them, up on the screen. But, in full disclosure, these were generated by asking AI to give me the text of Genesis 16 in NIV. And so I have noticed that sometimes some words are not correct. So you should read in your own Bible and see, is this actually what the Bible says? But for the most part, I've skimmed it, and I think it's mostly correct. So if you don't have a Bible handy, you can look up there. Genesis chapter 16, verse 1 says, "Now Sarai," this is the person whose name was later changed to Sarah, the wife of Abram, whose name was later changed to Abraham, of course, who is the person that we say we are the Church of God of the Abrahamic faith. That's the person we're talking about. So Sarai is the wife of the person that we are kind of naming our church after here. So that's setting the context a little bit. Verse 16, chapter 16, verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. But she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Read this next line with me. Abram agreed. Surprise! You know, his wife saying, "Hey, go take my maidservant, who's probably much younger, and go see if you can start a family through her to keep this G-rated, right?" But surprise, Abram agrees. I think, interesting. He agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. Now, in that time, in that culture, that was acceptable. Certainly today, that would be questionable behavior. I think the way they went about it was questionable as well. They didn't really consult with God about this plan. They just took matters into their own hands. But they did it. And so, verse 4, he slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." Verse 6. See, here's a difference between AI and what the Bible actually says. In my NIV Bible, it says your servant is in your hands. The AI put your slave is in your hands. Same meaning, different words. "Your servant is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think is best." Now, wait a minute. Sarai had given Hagar to Abram to be another wife for him. But now that there's trouble, He's giving her back to Sarai and saying, you do with her whatever you see fit. Now, this is not how I would expect that a man of integrity would treat his wife. You just do with her whatever you think. So I have some serious problems with what Abram decided to do here, but that's what he said. So then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. Verse 7. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from? And where are you going?" Now, think about this for a second. We've got an angel of the Lord, and if you look at the NIV, it uses all capital letters there for Lord, L-O-R-D. May not in the AI version, but in your Bibles, if you have NIV. And so whenever you see that, that means it's using the proper name of God, Yahweh. In Hebrew, it'd be Yad He Vav He, Y-H-V-H. That was his name. That was God's proper name. But the Jews didn't want to ever use that name and accidentally use it in vain. So they would write in their scriptures, Yad He Vav He, without any vowels, so that nobody could actually know for sure how to pronounce it. So whenever you see all capitals, L, capital O, capital R, capital D, that means that's the word that was used in the Hebrew scripture. And so this is the angel of Yahweh found Hagar near a spring. Now, whenever there's an angel of the Lord, it's as if the Lord himself is there. It gets confusing sometimes, but it's this agent principle. So when I'm working at the coroner's office, I go to a scene that I've been called to, and the police or the family will often say, the coroner is here. Now, my boss, the coroner, Jennifer Maraski, is not there. Most of the time, she doesn't go to the scenes unless it's really something that's, you know, a big case. But day to day, she doesn't go. But I am a deputy. I am an agent of my boss. And so that's what's happening here, is when an angel of the Lord appears, it's as if the Lord himself is there. He's carrying the message as if the Lord himself is speaking. So the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? But he knew her name. So why is he asking the question, where have you come from and where are you going? He knew exactly where she came from. He just said it. You're the servant of Sarai. So why is he asking that question? I think, I propose to you that it's because he wanted Hagar to think about it. Think about where you have been and where you are going. God, the messenger from God, knows your name. I know where you're from, but you think about it. So she answered, I'm running away from my mistress Sarai. Verse 9, the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now with child and you will have a son. But she already knew that too. But the angel knows this. They didn't have ultrasounds then. So how did he know that? Well, because he's the angel of the Almighty God who created that baby in Hagar's womb. And he knew it. God knew it. And his messenger was reporting the facts. So he said, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, verse 11, you are now with child, and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. So, other names that are important to remember in this story, Hagar, we kind of already talked about her. She was an Egyptian servant to Sarai. And her son was to be named, this name was given by the angel, Ishmael. Ishmael, interestingly enough, that means in Hebrew, God will hear. God will hear. So the angel told Hagar, go back to Sarai. You're going to have many descendants. They're going to be too numerous to count. Things are going to work out, in other words. You're going to name that boy, God will hear. Verse 12, he will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. Verse 13, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. you are the God who sees me. So in her language, she didn't say, you are the God who sees me. She said, Elroy. So she heard what the angel was saying to her about name your kid Ishmael, which means he hears. And she responded by saying, God, you see me. I'm going to call you the God who sees me. So verse 13 again, she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. This is why the well was called Bir Lahai Roy. So they named that spot after that incident. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. Verse 15. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. Now, for the sake of time, we're not going to read on to that into that story today too much more. But Abram gave the name Ishmael to the boy. Hagar knew that that name came from an angel. Did she share that with Abram later? I would think probably so. But Abram wasn't satisfied with that one. And that really wasn't God's plan. God had a plan to give Sarah a son. And so we read about that in the other coming chapters, which I would encourage you to do if you haven't read through that in a while. A lot of times, first of the year, people get on a Bible reading plan, they start to read at Genesis, and then they usually give up by about January 9th or so. And so we got, what, 4 more days. So you might not get there to Genesis chapter 17 or 18, but read through that, you know, and see what else it has to say. I think there are 3 main points that I want you to remember from this story. God sees you in your pain. That's point number 1. Hagar's story talks about her running from Sarai because she's basically being used in this story. She's being given to Abram as a wife. She conceives a son. And then that causes trouble in the family, and then she's being mistreated. So she's like, I don't know. I thought this was part of God's plan. She apparently is a faithful person. She knows God well enough to give him a nickname. She was feeling pretty lost and invisible, and God saw her where she was. I want you to think about maybe a time that you've lost something or someone, not like death, not like in death, but temporarily lost someone or something. Hannah and I have just been watching a movie. I say watching a movie because we keep falling asleep, but I think we finally finished it the other day, or Hannah did. It's called Lost on a Mountain in Maine. It's on the Angel Network on streaming. There's a book about the same story. And my mom worked with somebody who had a family connection to this real person who, what was it, in the 1930s? There was a boy who went hiking with his brother and father on a mountain in Maine, and he got lost. He got separated in a storm and spent several days wandering around this mountain, and people were looking for him, and they'd almost given up hope, and then I won't spoil the ending. You should watch it or read the book. But it's a perilous story about when somebody is lost or they feel like nobody's ever going to find them. Just the despair that causes. Last fall, we all went to a church picnic for the Oregon Church over in Byron at a family's large property over there, and Weston wandered off with one of the other children, and there's cornfields all around, and there's woods. I mean, it's hard to describe the scope of what this was like, but we didn't know where he was for, like, I don't know, 30 minutes or an hour or something, but it seemed like days. We were desperately, us and the other child's parents were searching. I mean, we drove, if you ever see our white van again, the little white van, I was driving on trails that were meant for like deer or for, you know, like UTVs or something, but I was driving our minivan because we're looking, I'm honking the horn, we're driving, but I scratched up the side of the van big time because I was hitting shrubs and trees and stuff, and that's the level of panic I was in because I thought we had lost Weston. That's the level of intensity that I believe that God looks for us. He seeks us out. When you feel like there's no way anybody's ever going to redeem me from this situation that I'm in, God is looking for you with that level of intensity. My second point is that God has a plan for your life. God's promise to Hagar was descendants too numerous to count. Just this past week, one of my kids, and I'll protect their privacy, but one of my kids and I were riding around, just them and me in the car. And the question came up, how can it be that God can be good, but allow bad things to happen? That was the gist of it. And how do you respond to that as a parent? Especially knowing what the bad things are that that child was talking about. And my best answer that I could come up with was that God knows how the story ends. And he knows that he wants you, in the end, to be in his kingdom with him. And the only way that he can have you be in the story at all is if everything prior to that, everything prior to your birth, happened exactly when it did. Because if you ever watch a movie about going back in time, things get messed up in a hurry if you change one little detail about history. Right? There's a ripple effect. So I tried to explain how, like, when I was a child, when I was 7 years old, there was a death in our family. My infant brother died, and it was a bad thing. But our family's response to that was to lean into our church. Interestingly enough, Hannah's dad co-officiated in 1989 the funeral of my infant brother. Who knows what would have happened if that death didn't happen? Now, I'm not saying that my brother Zachary's death had to happen for me to be in the kingdom. That's kind of a stretch, but if things didn't happen exactly the way they did, would I have ever met Hannah? Would any of my children have ever been born? No, certainly not. If I had a different wife or no wife at all, then none of my four children would have been born. So right there, none of my four children would have had an opportunity to be in the kingdom because they would not exist. Over Christmas break, the kids and Hannah and I went to see the movie Mufasa, The Lion King, in 3D in theaters. It's kind of cool. It's the story of The Lion King, but like the prequel. So before Simba and all that, his dad, Mufasa, how it's Mufasa's story. And there's some just really bad things that happen in that movie, some sad things and some betrayal. some loss. And so we were talking about that too in the car. We were talking about that movie that we had just seen, and I said, you know, the authors, the writers of the script of that movie could have made it without all that sad stuff. God has the power to make our lives without any sad stuff. But if you didn't have the loss of Mufasa's father in the movie, if you didn't have that, then the story would turn out completely different. And so, you know, I don't know why God chooses to allow some bad things to happen, but I do know that if you don't have everything happen in just the right way, then the good things can't happen at the end. So my third and final point that I want you to know here, and I know we're going over time, but you know what? I think God wants you to hear this today. So be it. Is that God invites you to see Him. God sees you, but He also invites you to see Him and to listen to Him. Hagar named God Elroy, the God who sees me. But then he asked, in response, he asked her to do something. He asked her to go back to Sarai and watch and wait for the blessings. He said, your descendants are going to be too numerous to count. Now that sounds unbelievable in that moment that she was in, that how are we ever going to get through this? How is this ever going to turn out all right? I can't go back and be just a normal wife to Abram, because Sarai is not happy about this situation. How am I ever going to have more descendants than can be counted? I want you to just think about a time in your life when you felt truly seen, truly noticed, truly recognized. Maybe it was a time at work. I think often it's the opposite, where you feel like you're putting in the effort and nobody notices. I was talking with a coworker this week about a difficult case that she had recently, and all the things that she had done right on this case, or felt like she had done right, and then the bosses were kind of nitpicking about one little thing that didn't get entered right in the computer, and it felt like frustrating. And so I was relating to that, and I said, I can relate to that feeling, that sometimes it feels like all the good you're doing isn't noticed, but the one little thing you're not doing right that's the one thing they pick up on. So I want you to think about a time when you really felt seen and known. And I want to remind you that God knows your name, your first name. You're on a first name basis with God. And we can be on a first-name basis with God. Hagar was in a desperate, dark place in her life, but she was on a first-name basis with God, and He guided her back to the right path. In fact, she gave Him the first name He ever had, Elroy. She was on a first-name basis with God, and you are eligible to also be in that kind of relationship with God. Revelation 3, verses 5 and 6 says, I will never blot out His name from the book of life. It could be talking about you. Change His to her if you want. I believe this is a prophecy. This could be talking about you. It could be talking about each one of us that's in this room. It says, I will never blot out His name from the book of life, but will acknowledge His name before my Father and His angels. This is Jesus talking here. He who has an ear, let him hear. Remember, Ishmael's name was, he will hear. we all have ears. So kind of like when the angel was saying, where have you come from? Where are you going? He already knew that. So this is not saying only those that have ears. We all have ears. So it's saying, pay attention to what I'm saying. You all have ears, so listen. Hear what the Spirit says to the churches. I will never blot out his name from the book of life. And read that chapter and see what it's talking about there. But it could be talking about you. I believe it's talking about you. I believe it's talking about me. I believe that the default is that we are in the Lamb's book of life. Our names, your name, my name is in the Lamb's book of life. And it's your choice if you want it blotted out. You have to, that's my belief. Some people will differ with my theology. But I believe that your default setting is not condemnation, but salvation. God's desire is for you to be in the kingdom and have salvation, and that's the default setting. Your name is in the book of life right now, but if you want to work at having it blotted out, that can happen. It's basically only by your conscious choice to not accept the free gift of salvation that Jesus offers. That's how you get your name blotted out, but Jesus says, I will never blot out his name from the book of life that of those people that are trusting in him. So I'd like to close with one hymn. It's hymn number 60, God Will Take Care of You. And please grab a hymn.